Hey guys, I've been thinking a lot about the 2016 election.
Huh?
The 2016 election, the country elected Donald Trump, Wisconsin elected Donald Trump. Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. Polls said she was going to win, and then everybody was surprised. Guys, we did a podcast about it.
Rings a bell. Yeah, that was funny.
So the reason I'm thinking about it is because we had an election last week.
Oh, you mean the nonpartisan spring primary?
Yeah, there was like 8% turnout.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you see where I'm going with this, right? I mean, we basically learned that we know nothing in 2016, and now we've got this nonpartisan low turnout February primary.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing here. So you think we should do a podcast about the lessons that we can learn from the 2017 election?
All right. Time for some wild speculation.
Lesson learned.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
Let's talk some wild speculation.
Woo!
That's really your line, though.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So we did, in fact, have a nonpartisan primary election this week. What can we say about it? Wild speculation and or just plain fact? What happened?
Wild speculation first. I think we can map out the next 10 election cycles now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, let's put that cart before that horse.
The pendulum has swung. As journalists, we have regained our lofty perch upon the tower
of
knowledge. We have some statistics for you.
We have a Dumbledore crystal ball.
Maybe that was Professor Trelawney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get to the facts part of what we
learned
on Tuesday.
So the cool thing about this that some people were excited about, which I think, you know, across the board is good news, is that more people turned out to vote in this election than was expected. Usually, like, the average turnout for these races, these nonpartisan spring primaries, it's like 4%. And this year, the State Elections Commission didn't even forecast. They didn't even, like, they were like, turnout is probably going to be so low, we're not even going to put a number out there. Now, they didn't say that, but they did not project a number, which is unusual.
And just to clarify, before the cart horse metaphor thing,
yeah.
What were people voting on? We should set that
we
out.
So... There was only one statewide election in this election, and it was for state school superintendent. There were some school board races and other things like that, depending on where you are in the state.
And like, so how did what actually happened? How did the election statewide election turn out?
So in the race for school superintendent, there were three candidates. Tony Evers is the incumbent state school superintendent, and then he was facing off with the two conservative candidates. You know, it's not official, it's nonpartisan, but kind of the conservative-backed candidates. And so Evers ended up winning 69.6% of the vote. Lowell Holtz won 23% of the vote, and John Humphreys got 7.4% of the vote. So basically a landslide victory in this primary for the incumbent.
And so that race gets narrowed down to two, the two people who got the higher vote totals.
That's right. And
in this case, the incumbent Evers, who's widely seen as sort of one of the, even though it's nonpartisan, as one of the last like left-leaning state officers. So does this, time for the wild speculation, does this, with Tony Evers taking such a huge chunk of this vote, is this a positive sign for left-leaning candidates in upcoming elections?
That's what people are saying, John.
And that's out there, right?
Yeah.
You've seen that out there. I saw it out there. So Tony Evers on this ballot does not appear with a D behind his name, and 8% is really low turnout to be. This is where I'm coming at.
So
on
he got
this.
70% of 8%.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And he smoked the other candidates, right? And they are the conservative candidates, widely viewed. They've kind of beat themselves up and perhaps hurt their chances in the general election by accusing one another of lying and, you know, effectively saying that they were trying to bribe one another by getting out of the race.
Some pretty intense allegations and accusations flying in this superintendent's race.
Yeah. Could you recount those, Laurel? Because, I mean... if only 8% people voted in this thing, there's a chance that people don't know the nastiness.
Yeah. So the drama in the superintendent's race, which really has been formidable drama.
For a school superintendent's
race. This guy, it got real. So basically what happened, and I'll try to keep it short, is that one of the candidates, John Humphreys, released this letter that he says Lowell Holtz gave him back in December, essentially trying to pressure him or suggest that he...
it was like, if you win, I get a job for a $150,000 job
and
a car with a driver.
Yeah.
Not just a car with a driver.
Right.
And if I win, you get a job and a car with a driver.
Exactly. And the whole bunch of power over urban school districts.
And they were going to break apart the school districts.
So Humphreys, the guy who actually released this letter that started the back and forth, he was the one who actually got knocked off in the election.
Yes.
So that didn't work out too well.
No. It turns out releasing the letter was not effective for his campaign.
So we've kind of downplayed it so far for Tony Evers. 8% turnout, nonpartisan race. Don't read too much into this, but it's a good win for Tony Evers. You know, it puts him in a good position. And I think in these low turnout races, Republicans typically they do well in other races. For example, the Supreme Court, which we should talk about in a minute. And so there's kind of this thought, at least this thought out there in my head, that, you know, eventually Republicans may figure out how to turn that into a victory for DPI. But it is something that has eluded them for years. I mean, always as red as things have gotten here in Wisconsin, people still support the candidate that is supported by teachers in Wisconsin when it comes to DPI. You know, that may change in April, but... you know, right now, Tony Evers has to feel good about those results.
And you have some pieces of paper here, Sean, just for a little bit of context that you so painstakingly printed out that have the results from this most recent superintendent's race versus the last time Tony Evers was up on the ballot.
Yeah, so this would be like in April of 2009. If you remember, we were headed toward a Tea Party election by that point. You know, the Obama honeymoon was over. Things were getting pretty Republican in the country. Tony Evers won with 57% of the vote in that April 2009 race. 2013, he won with 61% of the vote in 2013. Again, these are good numbers for Tony Evers, but I think they are a reason that you should, you know, Democrats should probably look at these results with a grain of salt and not as like a widespread rejection of the Betsy DeVos agenda, the, you know, new Trump administration.
That's what some folks are saying, is that like, well, Donald Trump managed to barely push through this nomination for a really controversial Secretary of Education choice in DeVos, who's like really big in terms of school choice and vouchers and that sort of thing. And so some people are saying, well, that decision really got a lot of people riled up and they came out to vote to support the, you know, public education candidate here in Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah, I saw at least one tweet that called Humphreys and Holtz the Betsy DeVos candidates, kind of trying to draw that equivalence there and say that a vote, you know, for Tony Evers was a vote against Betsy DeVos. And that's the equivalence that I think Democrats are trying to draw and the inspiration I think they're trying to get from this election. And
I mean, I guess Humphreys and Holtz both did say, like, publicly support DeVos there. But whether or not the 8% of folks who came out, the 70% of the 8% were motivated by, you know, their opposition to DeVos, who knows?
Exactly.
I mean, I think what Democrats are looking for is a sign, an early sign, that there is going to be this pushback in the country against Trump and Republicans. You know, that now that Republicans control everything, Democrats have woken up. This is the first sign that they've woken up and, you know, better things are to come. But this is always a race where Democrats have done well despite the circumstances in the country. And, yeah, it's a nonpartisan race. So
I think if there was one thing that they could draw from this, if anyone was going to draw from this, and I'm not saying it's a lot, but turnout was almost double what it's been in the past.
So maybe there are people, maybe so that is a sign that there are people out there who aren't normally inclined to vote in February, and they voted.
Yeah.
Maybe so, something driving them there, maybe, you know, maybe that change in Washington is driving them to vote in a nonpartisan superintendent's race. It really could be. I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah, but only still, it was only 8%.
Right.
And speaking of other officially nonpartisan races that might look good for one side over the other, I think you mentioned briefly the Supreme Court primary, where the only there was one candidate running unopposed, and she's seen as a conservative candidate on the court, right?
Right. So she didn't even. She will not have an opponent in April, and that's Justice Annette Ziegler, one of the court's five conservatives, the Wisconsin Supreme Court's five conservatives. There are only two liberal justices on the court. And that is the flip side of that April election. In races for the Department of Public Instruction, Democrats do well in that officially nonpartisan race. Mm-hmm. They have done abysmally in recent races for the state Supreme Court. You know, that is something where they just haven't it's gone so poorly for them that they just there was nobody who was wanted to go into that buzzsaw, you know, so to speak.
Gosh, that is a harsh characterization.
It has gone that way for Democrats. They cannot figure out how to crack that low turnout race when it comes to the court.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it hasn't been that every Democratic Supreme Court candidate has gotten totally clobbered. Because Democratic candidates have gotten really close to unseating, you know.
Yes.
We had a recount mm-hmm. for Prosser and...
That was Kloppenburg. It was unusual circumstances, higher turnout. Mm-hmm. The last race with Kloppenburg and...
Bradley was real close.
Right. And that was another high turnout race because mm-hmm. we had the presidential race. So, In that turnout environment, it just seems like Republicans, and in this race, they've learned how to win these things. Now, we should say this time around, there are some Democrats looking at Tony Evers' performance in February. Numbers are up, and they're saying, hey, really glad that we got somebody on the ballot for April. Thanks, guys. Because if there is a movement coming, and maybe there is, I think it's hard to call. If there is a movement coming and you got nobody on the ballot, that would be pretty heartbreaking for Democrats. But
I mean, is it too late at this point to put somebody else on the ballot run in the primary?
You'd have to have a write-in campaign. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That ship has sailed. I think Democrats are focusing. They will focus, you presume, their energy on the next few races for the Supreme Court because we've got one coming up the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Who's up in the next 3 years? Gableman.
So we've got Justice Mike Gableman, one of the court's conservatives, is up mm-hmm. in 2018. Justice Shirley Abrahamson would be up in 2019. Justice Dan Kelly, the newly appointed justice.
You know these things.
I teed up that question, and Sean just, like, knocked it out of the park. That was...
There's only seven, justices, you know.
But you know the order by year in which they're up for re-election.
I'll tell you why. Because 2007 was like the first big, nasty Supreme Court race. So I remember that. It's 2017, 10 years. Mm-hmm. Ziegler. 2008 was even nastier. I remember Gableman beat Lewis Butler. 10 years, Gableman.
Yeah.
And then I remember, this is getting really boring. That's sort of my barometer, though, is like when state Supreme Court races got nasty.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, here we are.
I mean, to get back to wild speculation again,
it's
my favorite, looking at these races coming up, if you're a conservative, does the fact that progressives didn't even field a candidate in this race, does that make you like really confident for the next several races that are coming up, whether or not they can knock off Abrahamson, who's the... one of the two remaining liberals, or, you know, whether Democrats are even going to, like, field anybody for Gableman or for Kelly?
I think if you're Republicans, you just got to look at results and say, we feel decent about the upcoming races. And so what if they lose? They still have the majority. You know, they've got a they've got one that they can afford to spare there and still have a Republican majority. I'm enjoying, speaking of wild speculation, all the back and forth about, I mean, it's so much fun to watch both sides tell everybody with such confidence what kind of a cycle 2018 is going to be. You know, Republicans put out like I'd say I probably get 5 press releases a day, it feels like, from national or state sources talking about, man, Tammy Baldwin is in trouble in 2018. You know, all the signs are pointing to her being in trouble. Come on, man. You don't know that. You don't know that. And then Democrats are saying, like, you know, I think Democrats are pointing, hoping that this cyclical, hoping the cycle swings back to them.
I don't remember who it was, but I saw somebody tweeting. It was a reporter, and they were talking about how, like, the biggest irony for 2018 would be that congressional control swings back to Democrats based on turnout from moderate suburban voters after reporters spend the next, like, year and a half going to rural diners trying to figure out and get the stories of the Trump voters who influenced the last one.
Right. The suburban revival.
You never know.
Yeah.
Or do you?
No.
I think we know in this room.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else is wrong.
But we're not going to tell you. Or we are, because we have a podcast.
We know that the only thing you can truly know is that we know nothing. Dust wind, dude. Dust wind.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
You can subscribe to get fresh episodes of the show on iTunes, where you can also rate and review the show. We're also on Google Play and a bunch of podcatching apps. And of course, you can find everything we've ever done at wpr.org/politics.